This Joint Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, February 26, 2021. The time is 9:01, and we're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Stevens and myself in person. Senator Hughes is joining us remotely. Senator Hughes, are you out there? I will confirm she's out there shortly. We don't have any business before the committee today, so we don't require a quorum. And I believe Senator Machicki will be showing up. Myself, Senator Hollins, present, and Senator Begich is excused. Representative Story, I see you're online. Would you like to introduce your members that are present? I think you're muted.
Sorry about that, and thank you. We're happy to join you today. For the record, I'd like to note that House members are joining this meeting remotely, and before I call the roll, I really wanted to express my appreciation for the flexibility required of both House and Senate members and the extra work of Senate staff in making this meeting possible. I'd also like to acknowledge the quick support of Senate and House records and the dedicated moderators of the Legislative Information Office. Thank you to all for making this work today. And online today, I'm going to call the roll. Co-chair Rep. Harriet Drummond.
I'm here.
Rep. Greyer Hopkins. I think
you're here. Yes, hello, I'm here.
Rep. Tiffany Zilkowski. Rep. Mike Prox. Rep. Mike Kronk.
I'm here.
And Rep. Ronald Gillum.
Ronald Gillum is actually present in the room today. Is that the end of your roll call?
Yes. I'd like to turn the gavel back to you, Senator Holland. Thank you.
And so I do see Representative Gillum is present in the room. Representative Gillum, would you like to join us up on the dais?
I'm here twice.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Holland. I appreciate the offer. And
go ahead.
To Representative Story, I had to come in a little early this morning, so I did not receive the email in time, but figured I'd attend in person.
Thank you.
And also welcome Senator Hughes. She managed to show up in person and online. I guess this is the real you in person. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. I'll apologize. I'm going to have my cell phone open on the deck because while we're going on today, I'll be monitoring the chat and seeing if anyone has any comments or statements. Today, we will hear an update from district and building leaders from around the state. Are there any questions or comments from the committee members before we begin? Seeing none, because of time constraints today, I ask members to consider holding their questions until the end of the presentations. We're going to be a little pressed for time because we will have to end this meeting in time for the 10:30 floor session. Dr. Lisa Parody, would you state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Madam Co-Chairs. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parody, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. I do want to thank you so much for taking the time today to hear from us, even as you are facing yet another setback due to COVID. We are also grateful for the hard work of your staff and for everyone who is making this opportunity possible today. ACSA is a private, nonprofit, 50-year-old organization. Next slide, please.
Slide up.
And I want to just quickly share with you a little bit about the umbrella organization that you will hear from members today. We represent the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, the Alaska School Business Officials, and the host of school administrators serving Alaska students across the state every day. We also are the parent organization for the Alaska Staff Development Network. And I will be introducing the folks that will be speaking with you today, and they will tell you about their respective organizations as they speak. Next slide, please.
Slide number 3 is up.
Thank you. We can all celebrate the collaboration that educational leaders have established since the beginning of the pandemic. Educators in Alaska have always been accustomed to making the most of the resources they are provided. So it made sense, and it was somewhat natural for us to immediately come together and collaborate on how to respond to the needs of our students and communities from the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. Since last year, ACSA has hosted weekly meetings that include superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and education leaders from across the state. We've also hosted meetings that include other Alaska state education leaders, such as AASB, the Department of Health and Social Services, giving us updates regularly from Dr. Zink and Dr. Olson. And I would be remiss if I did not thank Commissioner Johnson for his stalwart and ongoing support to ACSA and all of our members. He, too, has joined our meetings, and I know he's shared with you that they have been invaluable in terms of keeping our state on the same page and collaborating throughout this. Next slide, please. So it is my pleasure. Slide 4, please.
Dr. Parody, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Put slide number 4 up, and I'd like to welcome Senate President Senator Baczycki to the committee meeting today. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair. On the screen before you, you will see our presidents of each of the organizations we are privileged to work with. Carrie Boyd is the president of the Alaska Superintendents Association and, as an aside, was named the Principal of the Year for 2020. Robin Jones is the president of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the past president of ACSA, and was named this year as the Region 7 Principal of the Year. Jennifer Rinaldi is the president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals and is the head of 2 schools in the Matsuboro School District. Andy Ratliff is the president-elect of the Alaska Association of School Business Officials and senior director of OMB for the Anchorage School District. Sam Jordan is the grants and outreach administrator with the Alaska Staff Development Network, and I am so pleased to have him as one of our strong members on our team. So with that, if you can go to slide 5, please.
Slide 5 is up.
You do have a hard copy of our joint position statements, as well as an electronic copy. And what I want to just make sure to tell you this morning is that throughout the presentations, you will hear our members refer to different sections of the joint position statements in their remarks. We are a collective voice, and we arrive at these priorities over months of work and finding consensus about what is most important to education in Alaska each year. And I will note that if you have any questions, we're happy to follow up on anything following this presentation. I do hope you see that our very highest priority is student achievement. It is our number one priority. And adequate funding remains our most critical need. So with that, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Carrie Boyd, slide 6.
President Boyd, if you'd please state your name and your affiliation and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carrie Boyd. I am the superintendent of Yukon Koyukuk School District, and have been in the role for 14 years and also the president of ACSA and ASA. And I'm truly grateful that you're taking time today to meet with us to learn more about what's going on in the state. It's been a very challenging year for everyone. And we're gonna do our best to help help us through this. And if you have questions, as Dr. Parity said, we want to make sure that they're answered today or as we move through today, our presentation today. So thank you for that. And I'm going to give you an overview of what public education looks like in our state as the Alaska Superintendent President, and give you some perspective as an educator from a rural district. And then I'll focus on three of our joint position statement priorities. And each of my colleagues will also be touching on the rest, and they'll take a deeper dive into the position statements. And I do want to point out that as president, I was fortunate enough to be able to pick out the vision for this year, and you'll see it reflected at the bottom of our slides, leading together for Alaska students. And that's what our motto is, and we know and we can see through your outreach that you believe that as well. Slide 7, please.
Slide 7's up.
This is just a reminder that we'd like to start out by sharing that we're one large state, and while we're a tight-knit community, we have 54 school districts stretched out all over the vast and diverse regions with needs that reflect diversity. We are all responsible for all of our statements, for all of our students. Of these 54 districts, there's 19 rural education attendance areas. And with that, with all of our differences, we come together weekly or every other week to talk about how can we best serve our students in the state of Alaska. Slide 8, please.
Slide 8's up.
This is just a snapshot to give you another perspective. We covered the 54 school districts, but I also want to add that these districts, our districts, what we do, we are the largest employer in most of our communities. And if you're speaking in a business perspective, there are over 132,000 students. And right now, I think it's probably the highest we've ever seen in correspondence schools, over 20%. 455 school facilities, and 44%, nearly half of our facilities, are more than 40 years old with a backlog of maintenance needs to address. We currently have over 7,500 teachers, chronic turnover. My colleague Robin Jones will be speaking to this. I can tell you in the last month I've lost 4 teachers. That may not sound like a lot, but it is when you have 2 and 3 teacher schools. And much of this has just been through this very challenging time that we all are in. Slide 9.
Question from Senate, President Senator Machicki.
This guy.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Good morning, Ms. Boyd. Question on the district organization. So we have 54 school districts. I'm curious how that looks in other states. What is the logic, and I believe in local control for education, no question about that. But what is the logic on how districts are organized? I'm less focused on the number. I'm more focused on whether or not they are logically and effectively organized into districts, right? We're a very young state. It's not too late to reorganize if there's something that works better to take full advantage of our assets and funding. So I'm curious about that, and you don't have to answer today. I actually think that's a bigger question, but it is interesting. And I don't know that we are organized most effectively. Do you have a response, or would you rather get back to me, sort of, especially on the comparison to other states?
I can get back to you on that, but I do know just from right now, I've been working with the state to organize Rampart School from Yukon Flats into our district, and primarily it is because they're like students. They have the same cultural beliefs and backgrounds. Some of that was how the boundaries were organized in the very beginning. It's definitely something to look at as a state in comparison. I used to think that 54 school districts was a lot until I started looking. And in other states, they have an enormous amount of school districts. So, but it is definitely another conversation we should be looking at. Thank you.
And I'll just a reminder that it's a big presentation with little time, But Senator Hughes, you have a question?
This is a quick question. You may have to get back with us also. So you have the number of students, the number of teachers. I would like the number of administrators that are among all the districts, and that being someone who does not have a regular duty to provide classroom instruction.
Chairman, through Senator Hughes, thank you. We will get you that information.
I'd like good to question. Mention Representative Zolkowski has joined us virtually, and Superintendent Boyd, if you'd like to resume your presentation.
Okay, thank you. I'm on slide 9. This slide reflects a list. I'm not going to read it all to you, but it's just here to illustrate the fact that many school buildings have appeared quiet, but the volume of work that educators have been dealing with behind the scenes has been massive. I've been doing this for 14 years. This has been my most challenging year. It may seem like when schools are closed, it's actually been more difficult. There's been more time. There's double planning, preparing, double lessons, virtual teaching, making sure you are hitting all the needs of the student. And just, you know, I'm not sure if this, how this recent closure in your capital has affected where you've had to jump into virtual learning and virtual meetings or in person, but this has been something that our teachers have had to do since March, and it can be very disruptive. I think they're finally, it's taken months to get used to this, so I'm hoping we're going to see the light. Lots of people are getting vaccinated now, and as the sun is brighter these days and shining brighter, I think things are looking brighter for our state as well. Next slide, 10.
Slide 10 is up.
Okay. This one is, as Dr. Parody mentioned, our educational leaders have been collaborating regularly, and the ACSA surveys members regularly to be sure we're on top of the priorities of student achievement. That is our number one priority from the top on down and on and over. This survey was taken from a recent, fairly recent, in the last month and a half, and it shows the largest priorities, according to superintendents, are teacher retention and literacy, and while the greatest barriers are also teacher retention and support for teachers, followed by limited bandwidth and early learning gaps. Remote learning is also noted as a hindrance to student achievement, and we're all preparing and anticipating that addressing the consequences of the pandemic will be long-term. We do believe there will be some of that, but on the bright side, districts are planning on using what they have learned. They had more time to plan. And I'm hearing from our colleagues that there are many students that are actually excelling in the virtual environment, and they've adjusted. So there is a bright spot to this. Next slide, please.
Slide 11's up.
Hold harmless. This I'm sure you've heard about. This has been a topic. The slide reflects the home harmless funding as one of ACSA's joint position statements. It was evident early on in the pandemic that we were anticipating an impact on enrollment as families struggle to work from home, homeschooling, and hold down a job. And if you have one or maybe three or four children at home, it's been very difficult. ACSA supports legislative action that would provide FY21 hold harmless funding at 100% of the entire formula. Next slide, please.
Slide 12's up.
Okay. This is a letter that ASA wrote to the commissioner, which he's been very responsive to, just first addressing the issue and expressing strong support for using the November 19th estimated student count to determine funding for fiscal year 2021. And as the commissioner has testified, he has appreciated us helping to set a target. And currently it looks like we have 7 districts that will need to be working with you and the department that might be in a critical position due to funding. Next slide, please, 13.
13's up.
And excuse me, Senator Holland, I'd like to recognize that Rep. Prax is live streaming as he could not get into the meeting today, but he is present. Thank you.
And also, I believe Senator Begich is tuned in remotely as well.
Okay. Throughout the past year, enrollment has been a whole new ballgame. For the first time, we're seeing huge shifts out of neighborhood schools in favor of homeschools and statewide correspondence. Typically, I could project, as superintendent, I could project within 20, 30 students, maybe 40, where we're going to be. That's not the case this year for most districts. And while some were worried about losing students, other districts with correspondence programs like mine, we were suddenly struggling to find the staff and resources to keep up with a surge in enrollment. I know our enrollment has tripled. In-school enrollment changes, you can see in the slide, from a drop of more than 50% to almost 10%. And 68% of districts have seen losses on the average, and on average districts have seen 9.41 decrease in average daily membership. The challenges that become anticipating what families choose to do in the fall, assuming they're getting back on track. It has been very challenging for all of us to know. We've been working as superintendents, collaborating how this may look. We've done our best to project those enrollments, but we looks like we probably won't know until fall where that will be. But with shifting enrollment, it gives us another variable. And what most schools are anticipating is to expect students to come back to brick and mortar schools with a slight decline, but really at no cost savings. And we just won't know for a while. For example, as I said, in my own district, we tripled enrollment because we do have a homeschool program. But since schools have been opening in the last, it's been about a month now, we have lost 219 students going back. I have a survey so I can see, and they've all gone back to the brick and mortar schools, which is good. Slide 14.
Slide 14's up.
Okay. The pandemic is temporary, we hope, but the impact is lasting. It's going to be with us. It's going to change us in many ways. And most students are expected to return to schools. Future funding must consider the cost of recovery. The current statute is not sufficient to cover losses that many districts face. The cost of turnover alone is due to insufficient funding is great. You'll hear more about that from Andy in his presentation. And using the November 2019 estimated cost data would still not meet all of the increased costs to stabilize budgets. But it isn't just about funding. It's about our students and what we need to do to provide that quality education to them. We have to be providing summer school, extended learning opportunities, academies for them. Many students have not had that opportunity. So these are things that we need to be planning for. Slide 15, please.
15's up.
This just gives you an idea from, this was the composite of superintendents from 2009 and 2010. They sent me this. It's not funny, but it's funny. I'm the only one circled in there. But we're losing superintendents at a rate, at a very fast rate. And, you know, I could probably speak here and tell you why we're losing them. I'm not going to talk about the problems here, but we are looking at some solutions for retention. Next slide.
Slide 16.
ACSA, when I was superintendent first year many years ago, I had a mentor. I believe the state paid for it for 1 year, which was wonderful. That funding stopped, and since then ACSA has taken over in the last 5 years, I believe. And we know based on statistics that many educators who move from outside the state to teach do not stay long. Our organizations have been offering programs to specifically provide professional learning and mentor Alaskan educators, including the Aspiring Superintendents Program, District Office Leader Program, new and incoming superintendents, ASLE, which is the Alaska School Leadership Program. Robin Jones will be talking more about that. And the Alaska Staff Development Network, which has just been a world of support to all educators across the state. Sam Jordan will be talking about that. Slide 17.
Slide 17 is that?
And talking about, I don't have to say a lot about this. We know how important it is to have stable, predictable funding. It improves our efficiency. It keeps the focus on student achievement. We know what we're working with. I don't have to have three, four, five plans, or we don't, deciding, do we cut a program? Do we cut a person? What are we going to be offering? As a superintendent, when I know my budget, I can sign contracts and not pink slips, and we can create stability. Slide 18.
18 is up.
This is just an illustration of the pipeline that ACSA has been creating over the years to address some of the chronic turnover that we have in the state of Alaska. And it's not just the state of Alaska. I want to make sure everyone knows that. This is a crisis across the nation. We just have more of it's more prevalent here. But we have now the District Office Leadership Support Program, Aspiring Superintendents, new and incoming cohorts. And this year alone with superintendents so far, and there may be more, we have 13 leaving. On a positive note, we have that pipeline that we're pulling some new superintendents and principals into from that pipeline. Slide 19, please.
19 is up.
School safety, so I have to take a drink. Trying to go fast. We have 83 slides. That's a lot. For your reference, there's the joint position statement on school safety. And I'll be just talking a little bit about the infrastructure deficit on slide 20.
So we're on slide 20 right now?
Thank you. And I'm sure you've heard this, but we have school construction maintenance and major maintenance of $2.3 billion. Average buildings are 39 years old. We have 59 buildings over 6 years old. Next slide, please. 21.
21 is up.
And this slide is pretty interesting. This slide was shared with us from the Alaska Municipal League and just reflects the needs of our schools. The state has funded 8.6% of the requested projects. That is 118 of 1,366. And I just want to say, just because as an REAA, this list is the only list that REAAs can use. There's no other funding source. There's 818 on there that have been looked at. Every 2 years, districts are required to resubmit an application. And if there's any adjustment in population or any changes, it's about $20,000 to $30,000 to resubmit an application or more if you're doing schematic designs or updating your condition surveys. So lots of backlog on maintenance. This is an Alaska problem, not just rural. This is the whole state. We have to be looking at this for the safety of our students. Slide 22.
Slide 22 is up. I'll just note that our slides and our handouts are a little different than what's on the board. So this is 22 right here. Slide 22
okay.
is up. Our slides are, you're doing fine. It's just our paper copies are off-numbered from the presentation.
Okay, thank you. I apologize. I actually can't see the slides you're looking at. I only have the ones in front of me. So hopefully they're making sense.
Slide 22, career and technical education.
Okay, career and technical education, hot topic around the state. Career and technical education over the years. Some districts are doing fantastic with it. Others need a little more help. many partner with Career Technical Education. Over the years, we have seen different funding sources for it in the district, Carl Perkins, other funding grants, but it's one of the DEED has this as one of its education challenge priorities, and our members agree. So we'll be hearing more about CTE and what we can do. I know in many districts, many students, some districts have as much as 75 to 80% of their students are career CTE bound more so than college bound. So it'd be nice to really be looking at ways we can come together as a state to offer this. And there's so many jobs in the state that we can have Alaskans fill and have that pipeline expand from our schools right into some of those careers. And next slide, please.
Slide 23.
And just to reiterate, CTE provides students with a foundation for high paying skilled jobs, and gives students the ability to be future ready skills in Alaska so they don't leave. Next slide, please.
Slide 24.
And lastly, the average high school graduation rate for students in the CTE program is 93%, significantly higher than the national average of 80%. And now, that's what I have for now. I'll be glad to answer questions at the end, or if you think of anything else. I'd like to turn it over to my wonderful colleague, Principal Robin Jones, President of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction, Superintendent Boyd. And good morning, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chairs, and honorable members of the Joint House and Senate Education Committee. First, I just want to say thank you for inviting our testimony this morning and for everything you do to support public education in Alaska. Next slide. For the record, I am Robin Jones, the proud principal of Chief Ivan Blunka School in New Studiahawk, Alaska, within Southwest Region School District. I was born and raised in Anchorage and have served for 12 years in rural Alaska. I am representing the Alaska Council of School Administrators and the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. Next slide. As president of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, I have the unique opportunity to design a vision and direct a path to guide the association. During my presidency, the theme has been creating meaningful connections through unity and leadership. To help you understand what it means to create meaningful connections through unity and leadership, I wanted to give you some background and context about the work that I have done in my school, district, and community. Next slide. As I mentioned before, I have served in the same district for 12 years as a school counselor, assistant principal, and now principal. I realized early on in my career that before I could really make a difference in the lives of our students, I would need to first immerse myself in the community and then help my staff connect in the same way. Helping my staff make meaningful connections is what I strive to do to provide an excellent education for every student every day. I hope you can recognize that this is not a process that can happen overnight. Next slide. A recent report from the Pew Research Center conducted in 2018 and put out by the National Association of Secondary School Principals identified principals as the most trusted leaders in our country's most prominent institutions. Public trust is an asset, perhaps even a principal's greatest asset, as it provides principals with a platform of credibility that inclines stakeholders to listen when you say what your school needs to succeed, or even what success looks like. The public trust also puts principals in a better position to advocate for all students. Next slide. However, with a 38% turnover rate for principals, followed closely by a 36% turnover rate for teachers in rural, remote Alaska where I serve, communities have developed a deep sense of mistrust in schools, principals, and teachers, which makes teacher retention initiatives and efforts more important now than ever. Next slide. As outlined in the joint research study, to better understand and address principal turnover conducted by the NASSP and the Learning Policy Institute, we know that principals affect student learning through their influence over schools, supportive staff, and work to maintain a positive culture and climate. Research also demonstrates that a principal's ability to create a positive working condition and collaborative supportive learning environments plays a critical role in attracting and retaining qualified educators. Teachers cite principal support as one of the most important factors in their decisions to stay in a school or in the profession. In fact, researchers found that teachers are 17% more likely to leave a school when they have a new principal, because when principals leave, this instability creates a loss of shared purpose and trust. And when principal turnover is frequent in schools, teachers and the community are less likely to support a new leader. Thus, a change in leadership can derail school improvement initiatives, make it difficult to build a school's capacity, and lower student achievement. At a time when many schools throughout our state and nation are struggling to find and keep teachers, the leadership of a strong principal takes on added importance for student success. Next slide. It is also very important to understand the equity issues that exist that affect turnover and student achievement. Despite the incredible support the legislature has provided in the past to increase bandwidth in our underserved areas, there are still communities, like mine, for example, that do not have the infrastructure to support the 25 megabits of download provided by the Broadband Assistance Grant and do not have access to home internet services. If there is any silver lining to the COVID-19 pandemic, it is that a sudden shift to virtual learning has highlighted the ongoing and increasing need for Alaska students, educators, and leaders to have equitable access to the digital world, both inside and outside of the school environment. In Southwest Region School District, despite extraordinary efforts to set up an intranet system, we still do not have the critical infrastructure to support any online learning. And if I could accomplish just one thing here today, it would be to raise awareness for the fact that there is no such thing as unlimited internet in rural Alaska, and the data caps make online learning virtually impossible. The average cost of a 60 gigabyte home internet plan is $199.99 per month. And even when free in-home internet was provided in the spring, the sudden increase in use just created a slower connection for everyone involved. We also have unreliable and often non-existent cell phone coverage, so we cannot even rely on our cellular service to safely connect to our students and parents. Amidst these challenges, I am happy to report that ACSA and its affiliate associations have been joining forces to improve retention and close the opportunity gap for our students across Alaska. Next slide. In our joint position statement for preparing, attracting, and retaining qualified educators, we believe that retaining effective educators and leaders is essential for increasing student achievement and eliminating academic disparity for all of Alaska students. Next slide. In our joint position statement for increasing bandwidth in underserved areas, we believe that it's critical to recognize the ongoing and increasing need for Alaska students, educators, and leaders to have equitable access to the digital world. Next slide. As you can see on this map, it is not just Southwest Region School District that lacks the critical infrastructure necessary to support online learning, as almost 60,000 Alaskan students across our state experience the same deficit. Next slide. Another great feature of ACSA is the Alaska School Leadership Academy. When I first became a principal, I had access to the Rural Alaskan Principal Preparation and Support Program, as well as the Alaska Administrator Coaching Project. These programs have long been cut due to funding, but in partnership with the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, the Alaska Staff Development Network, and the Anchorage School District, along with the University of Alaska Southeast, we have been able to offer the Alaska School Leadership Academy, which was designed to provide early career principals with a mentor and a collegial cohort that is engaged in networking, skill building, and mutual support across our state. Over the course of 3 years, we have been able to support principals from 64 different schools. I have personally served as a mentor coach to 8 new principals and helped them in the areas of establishing and communicating school goals, curriculum, instructional evaluation, evaluating student progress, instructional time, teacher support, encouragement, and incentives, staff professional learning, and administrator staff interactions. I make myself available to my mentees whenever they need my help, and have probably learned as much from them as they have learned from me. We are just finishing up our third year of ASLA, and the program has provided limitless benefits to principals, staff, and students across our state. I credit all of these principal preparation programs for their contributions to my growth and development as a leader, and for providing me with the support I desperately needed to survive the immense pressure and challenges our first and second year principals face, which are only amplified in rural Alaska. Next slide. A couple of years ago, while visiting with Representative Story at the Capitol, she recommended reading the book Stop Talking, which provides educator resources for teaching and learning in Indigenous ways. When educators make a commitment to be consistent for their students, staff, and community year after year, they are also better able to provide an education that is culturally responsive, relevant, and engaging. I wanted to take a moment to thank Representative Story for the book recommendation and for helping me and many others grow as educators and leaders. As we say in Yupik, Koyana Akva, or thank you very much for the recommendation. Well, instead of becoming a turnover statistic, I have made an ongoing commitment to serve as an educator and leader in rural Alaska going on 13 years. And we know that at the school level, principals are the second most important factor associated with student achievement, right after teachers. So principal turnover can result in a decrease in student achievement. The average cost of teacher turnover is $20,000 and an astonishing $75,000 for each principal turnover. At my site, we've experienced many years of nearly 100% retention on a team that is made up of award-winning educators who have established credibility and been recognized for excellence. The National Assistant Principal of the Year, two-time Region 7 Assistant Principal and Principals of the Year, the Inclusive Practice winners for the state of Alaska, the new CTE Teacher of the Year, three Southwest Region School District Teachers of the Year, and most recently, the Alaska Teacher of the Year alternate. But instead of investing in these exceptional educators and principals to combat this alarming turnover and address these inequities, with public education funding continually on the chopping block, we are being asked to do more and more with less and less. Next slide. I want you to know that each staff member wears so many different hats. We are counselors, nurses, social workers, law enforcement agents, and mental health providers to students who come to us broken with some of the highest rates of trauma and adverse childhood experiences in places lacking adequate public safety supports and health services. And each of my teachers goes above and beyond every single day with extremely limited resources and training to be everything for these children and to meet their unique needs while making them feel safe and helping them heal. Our team is stronger than ever as a result of the collegiality, relational trust, and institutional knowledge established by these dedicated educators who are devoted to increasing student achievement, preserving the culture, closing gaps, and providing students with every opportunity to be successful. Sadly, the school story I'm sharing is the exception and not the rule. And 100% of our certified staff, including myself, fall into the Tier 3 defined contribution retirement system with no access to Social Security and no real safety in our future. While many rural Alaskan leaders are trying to model what we've accomplished in New Studiahawk, I fear that until education funding is prioritized, until a more competitive retirement system is made available, until school safety measures along with social, emotional, and mental health supports are in place, and until students have access to equitable opportunities regardless of where they live, while I will just stand to lose exceptional educators from my team every year, it is the students and the communities who rely and thrive on this consistency that will suffer the most. With that, I wanted to thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to testify this morning and urge you to support any legislation that helps us create these meaningful connections through unity and leadership. It is now my pleasure to introduce my colleague from the Elementary Association, who I've had the privilege to partner with to provide K-12 principals an opportunity twice a month to collaborate with Commissioner Johnson, Dr. Zink, and Dr. Olson throughout this pandemic. Principal Jennifer Rinaldi is the proud principal of Willow Elementary School and the president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, and we invite her testimony at this time.
Well, thank you, Robin, and good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Rinaldi, and I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals to introduce our organization to you and testify in support of two ACSA joint position statements, which are social, emotional, and mental health and early childhood education. Next slide, please. Shown here is our Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals Board, and that includes our Executive Director, Jennifer Schmitz. We have representation on our board from Fairbanks North Starboro School District, LKSD, Anchorage School District, Juneau School District, and Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, which is Eric Peterson, our past president, and also our 2020 National Distinguished Principal of the Year for the state of Alaska. Next slide, please. And this year, I'm excited to serve as the president of AAESP, as well as be supporting the incredible teaching staff and student learners at Berriosipa School and Willow Elementary School, both located in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District. I know every principal says this, but I am incredibly lucky to be working in this great district and with some of the very best educators around, and that's our certificated teachers, our classified support staff, secretaries, custodians, and our families. And if you want to see a tremendous team working seamlessly on behalf of Alaskan students, please reach out to me anytime you are in Willow, and I'm more than happy to introduce you to our award-winning staff. And we've also got a pretty great ice rink, so bring your ice skates. We can shoot a puck around. Next slide, please. So just a little bit of information about the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals here on the slide. We're proud of our increased membership this year and our members' advocacy, participation, and commitment to education and student achievement. Our board is strong, we're committed to fiscally conscious leadership, and we have a primary mission of supporting our members. Our organization has divided the state into five different regions, and we've made sure that each region is represented. And we have appreciated the opportunity to actively participate in the virtual leadership meetings that ACSA has organized this year. We also have a close partnership with our National Association of Elementary School Principals, which allows us to keep our members up to date on what is happening at the national level. And before I begin talking about two important issues facing education today, I want to share two beliefs that have helped guide me when challenges arise as an administrator. The first is the old adage that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. When we approach issues from a proactive perspective, we gain an incredible amount of latitude when we need to course correct. And this is highly preferable instead of operating in a reactive mode where in education, the effects can last for generations. Secondly, when problems occur, it is important to be solution driven. As leaders, we are often the go-to when problems arise. However, it is essential that identified problems are accompanied by potential solutions. So as I present today, it's my goal to not only share with you the challenges facing education, but also the solutions that have been developed to proactively meet these challenges and provide successful outcomes for future generations. Next slide, please. So the first area I'd like to talk about today is the fragile topic of social, emotional, and mental health of the students we work with. The slide in front of you portrays a very troubling picture for our youth. You'll note that the rate of child maltreatment and suicides is quite high, with the latter having a substantial impact on males and Alaska Natives. And while these statistics are concerning, as educators, we are learning more and more about what can lead youth to these outcomes, and that includes a deeper understanding of what my colleague Robin Jones referred to, which are ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences. Next slide, please. So ACEs are stressful or traumatic experiences, and you can see the list there on the left. And they include abuse, neglect, et cetera. And we're becoming more aware of the long-term effects of ACEs and what they have on an individual over the course of their lifetime. So when I started my career in education almost 20 years ago, the term ACEs was not widely known. Now as an administrator, this is something we frequently conduct staff trainings on. And in these trainings, our staff have the opportunity to assess themselves on their own personal ACEs score, and many have been surprised by how high their personal scores are. The good news is that people with high ACEs numbers can recover, and preventing ACEs and building resilience in Alaskans who have experienced them has the potential to pay enormous dividends. And the earlier we can provide these supports, the better the outcomes. Next slide, please. This slide illustrates the number of ACEs affecting our students. And of particular importance on this slide is that more than half of our young Alaskans have experienced one or more ACEs prior to the age of 12, with approximately 27% of those indicating two or more adverse childhood experiences. You'll note the data here is almost 10 years old, and even with the pandemic, it would be very surprising if these numbers had decreased over that time period. A report prepared for the Alaska Mental Health Board by Patrick Sidmore, and I can get you this report because it's extremely interesting, cited a study by the CDC that estimates the average childhood cost of non-fatal maltreatment to be $48,375 per victim. And this has a substantial fiscal impact on our state, not just from the direct economic impact of treatment and rehabilitation, but also as a result of the impact on our classrooms and the teachers who struggle with limited resources, training, and time to provide individualized assistance for students with increased needs. When it comes to mental health supports, our buildings are grossly understaffed, and many do not have adequate or any counseling staff readily available to them. Our teachers feel an incredible amount of pressure to provide the mental health services our students so desperately need. And as an administrator, I do everything I can to support my teachers, but as a state, we have to realize our kids are facing crises at critical levels, and our teachers are overwhelmed and frustrated with the expectation that they provide services they don't have the expertise or adequate time for in the day. Next slide, please. So this slide includes language from our joint position statements on social, emotional, and mental health, which provides the solutions to the challenges our students are facing with regards to ACEs. And the following words were shared with me from one of my colleagues who's an administrator in rural Alaska, and they were written by his school's social worker, and they perfectly capture the critical role that is filled by our limited number of school-based mental health staff. And I'll read her words. A few years ago, I was contacted by an individual who had a pre-existing relationship with a student on my caseload. This individual shared that a student texted them with suicidal ideation the night before and identified me, the school social worker, as the person she felt comfortable talking with about her concern. The student was absent from school, but when I reached out to her and her family, she immediately came to school when I agreed to meet her in the front office and spend some time with her before she would be asked to go to class. When she arrived, she shared that her family had been evicted. There had been continuous alcohol use in the home, and she hadn't been able to sleep, that she was unable to take most of her clothing or wash what she had, and the family had no running water for showering or washing clothes where they were staying. She hadn't eaten for 2 days, and she had continuous thoughts of suicide. By meeting with her, I was able to address basic needs to help her feel more comfortable staying at school, help her access the school's private shower and clothing donations, provide breakfast as well as emergency food to be taken home and accessed daily for as long as it was needed, and help her identify a safety plan for after school. I was able to contact her parents, who agreed to her plan to stay with a friend. I was able to contact OCS regarding her feelings of being unsafe and conduct a risk assessment for suicide. We were able to identify healthy coping skills as well as positive supports outside of school. I was also able to speak with her parents about accessing ongoing behavioral health services. This student was able to return to class that day and continued to regularly attend school from that point forward, contacting me regularly when additional needs arose. I was able to check in periodically regarding safety and personal needs. Teachers do not have time for this type of intervention in case management, nor is it their role in a public school environment. This is one of countless cases of support that I provide each day. Each student has a different story and different needs, but building relationships of trust and providing a sense of safety and support from a young age, while also proactively teaching needed skills that are essential at this young age are in order to provide preventative and not just reactive services. By allocating funding to help support our students when they're first experiencing challenges, we are ultimately saving money and saving lives. Next slide, please. And this is the full text of the joint position statement that you should have there in front of you, or if not, it's in this year's JPS pamphlet. Next slide, please. So another important factor leading to positive generational outcomes for Alaskans is the access to early childhood education. And I know this is a very hot topic. We know that when our youngest Alaskans have access to quality pre-K programs, there are numerous positive returns, including greater academic preparedness, greater likelihood of staying in school, and overall improvement of lifelong health outcomes. My colleague Eric Peterson is the principal of Paul Banks Elementary School in Homer, which is a pre-K through second grade school. And he shares that year after year, the students that have attended his Title I pre-K program are consistently the students that are leading his kindergarten class, both academically and socially. And these same students remain leaders as they move throughout his elementary school. It is clear that early intervention and instruction is one of the best predictors of increased student achievement. Next slide, please. And similar to investing in mental health, it will pay dividends for years on end. So this chart shows the return of every dollar invested in early childhood programs, and you can see the compounding effects documented by the Absidarium Project for those identified through age 21, and on the far end, the study conducted by Perry Preschool, which identified a positive return 9 times greater than the initial investment. And by providing increased access to early learning programs, we can help equalize the playing field for young children who may not have the ability to otherwise engage in robust learning opportunities. Next slide, please. And again, our solution to closing this achievement gap is outlined in the following excerpts from our joint position statements on early childhood education, which you'll see there in front of you. And next slide, please. The full text of the JPS statements on early childhood education are right there in front of you as well. And next slide. So early childhood education, social, emotional, and mental health supports, as you can see, are very closely intertwined, and they're both critical components for student success. And as we learn more about students in development, we know they're facing more challenges, and we simply cannot leave education and education funding the same. There is so much to be proud of in our state, and that includes our districts and our schools and our principals and our teachers and our kids and our families. And we're working tirelessly for the success of our youngest Alaskans. However, we have work to do, and our goals will not be met by assigning blame to one stakeholder group, but by proactively working together to address our challenges by identifying resources and providing the support so greatly needed in our schools today. Next slide, please. So, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak. We all very much appreciate your time. And with that, I'm gonna pass it to my colleague, Andy Ratliff, who's the Senior Director of OMB for the Anchorage School District and President-elect of Alaska.
Thank you, Jennifer. For the record, I am Andy Ratliff. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for Anchorage School District, and I'm also the President-elect of Alaska. Chair Holland, Chair Story, thank you for your time, and members of the committee, thank you for your time for allowing us to speak. I know it's very limited this time of year. Next slide. A little bit of history on ALASBO. We were founded in 1974 by a group of Anchorage officials with an emphasis on professional development and addressing challenges in turnover, finding experienced business managers. As you might imagine, governmental accountants are difficult to find in Anchorage, probably even harder in remote areas. So ALASBO has really taken a grow-your-own approach to try to get these positions filled and have qualified individuals in there. We instituted a new business manager institute where we train up folks on an intensive kind of training schedule, as well as mentoring programs for new folks. And this includes finance, payroll, HR, budgeting, purchasing, transportation, and facilities for the most part. This benefits the members at all levels through continued professional development, allowing members to connect with each other and share ideas and mutual understanding of statutes and processes. In turn, this benefits the state through more consistent reporting and provides more accurate, comparable data so you guys have the information you need to make your decisions. I'd like to thank Deed Finance for their continued support within ALASBO. They're a great asset for us to be able to bounce ideas off of and get the state's perspective of funding and reporting. Next slide. So this is our joint position statement for priority funding. Really knowing the amount of funding for future years is critical for districts across Alaska to plan their instructional programs. And I'll use Anchorage as an example and provide a brief overview of our process. Each year, our budget is prepared and passed by our school board prior to March 1st in accordance with our municipal charter. These budgets are prepared based on what is currently in state statute at the time, and it's usually prior to the legislature taking up a budget bill. Generally, these budgets have contained some reductions as inflationary pressures limit our purchasing power. As contracts go up, you know, we can't afford as much things as we had in the past. If there are any funding changes made during the session, up or down, our district will rework our budget once it becomes law. And even if the district receives additional funding and is able to add back what was originally reduced to balance the budget, it's somewhat demoralizing for the staff affected and fosters distrust among staff and community just as that process, we eliminate positions and then add them back, kind of get the crying wolf effect, so to speak. So forward funding would allow districts some stability for staff and help districts recruit and retain our qualified educators. Next slide. The enhanced fiscal plan, another joint position statement that really highlights the need for long-term funding. And it's not just to benefit education. This would benefit state departments and communities that depend on state funding as well. One of the challenges that we face with year-to-year funding is implementing programs designed to improve student proficiency over the course of their K-12 education. Programs will get implemented and then watered down or eliminated in future years due to inadequate funding. And when this happens, districts are never really able to assess whether or not the program worked in the form that it was originally intended. So we really want to be able to make long-term plans for the K-12 education of our students and keep these programs in place to be able to really assess what works and what doesn't. Next slide. So you've seen this. This is the state's foundation formula. I know we're limited on time, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it really gives you a brief overview of how enrollment becomes ADM, or adjusted ADM, and in turn turns into funding. So enrollment is fairly close to ADM, but it's adjusted for part-time students and transfers in or out during the count period for the most part, which is the first 20 days in October. There's a school size factor, which larger schools, there's a larger adjustment for smaller schools versus larger schools. The graph at the bottom, the little chart there, shows a graphical representation of what that school size adjustment looks like. And it really accounts for economies of scale that can be realized in larger schools. And frankly, I think this part of the formula works quite well as far as being able to staff a school based on the enrollment for the overhead that's needed. The next step is the district cost factor, which adjusts for cost differentials in different districts. It's going to be more expensive to educate students up on North Slope than it is in Anchorage, for sure. The next step is special schools adjustment, which is a 20% block grant style add-on to cover special ed, gifted, ELL, bilingual, bicultural, and vocational education. After that, there's a CTE adjustment of another 1.5% to pay for career technical education, and then the intensive needs adjustment is after that, that's 13 times the number of students. And then correspondence is added on at the end at 90% of the correspondence enrollment. This becomes the adjusted ADM, which is multiplied by the base student allocation to get what is called basic need. Some districts are then reduced by a required local contribution and or federal impact aid receipts. You guys have probably seen this a lot, but just to have the really high-level overview of it for both you guys and the public is always a good thing that we do in most of our presentations. Next slide. So this slide shows how we spend our money as a state. 75% of our funding goes into instructional state functions, which is predominantly teachers, general ed teachers, special ed, ELL, gifted teachers, teachers' assistants that are in the classroom, nurses, librarians, principals, security guards, instructional supervision, professional development, instructional technology are all areas that are within this 75% number. The 25% goes into non-instructional functions, which is district administration and support for the school board, superintendents, business offices, HR, purchasing, these functions that are outside of classrooms. Part of the other 25% is also school admin support. While these folks are in schools, it's our school secretaries, our administrative assistants, registrars. These folks are in schools. They're helping the staff, helping the students, but they are, as far as the state functions are concerned, as non-instructional. As are operations and maintenance, which varies considerably across districts with the cost of utilities, but also custodial staff, our maintenance staff, and major maintenance projects that keep schools functioning. So there's a lot of these folks that are in schools, but again, are considered non-instructional. And the same goes for student activities and community services are also in that 25%. Next slide. So the next slide is just a quick breakout of what makes up the 75%. whether it's instruction, special education instruction, instructional support. You can read the slide. I don't think I need to read it to you, but just to provide that additional layer of information for you guys. You know, up until 2016, there was a requirement that 70% be spent on instructional categories and 30% be non-instructional. And that was taken out of the statute and back in 2016. And I think it's predominantly due to waivers that were required for these districts that had really high utility costs that were really just driving that percentage, and they could never functionally meet that goal. So a few of the districts had that issue, and now it was resolved by really kind of taking that out. But there was, you know, there's really not a whole lot you could do about that with the high cost of utilities in those areas.
Mr. Chair.
One moment, please. A question or comment from...
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I just want to ask the chair if we could get this. Our page isn't exactly like theirs, and so we can't see the key for the pie graph. So maybe we could get that provided to us.
I believe that the current... I'll apologize. There were some last-minute changes to the PowerPoint presentation that didn't get caught in this, but the current one available on the web page is the one that they're presenting.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Radcliffe, please resume.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So another joint position statement is trying to address the high cost of health care in Alaska. You know, Access supports exploring measures to reduce the overall cost of health care in Alaska. And I want to give an example of what we've done in our district to be able to try to flatten some of those costs. ASD has partnered with the Vera Clinic to focus on employee wellness and flatten the trend of rising health care costs. Under this model, our district contracts with a medical clinic to provide medical services to employees. The district will pay the contractor a pass-through cost to the clinic and then set up an administrative fee for them to manage the clinic. So really, we're just paying the cost of the services plus a set admin fee that's on top of that. So it allows the district to purchase the services we need for our members, limit the cost increases, and have visibility into the pricing structure and profit margins of our provider. This model is focused on wellness and coordinated care, and office visits are generally scheduled for 2 to 3 times the duration of other doctor's offices, giving employees ample time to address health care concerns. And employees in the district's plan are incentivized to use the clinic at little or no cost to the employee, and the district has been able to, over the last several years or a few years, flatten or lower our claims cost over that time period. So we've really seen a good benefit of having this clinic and directing our employees to it. And our employees seem to really like it, and the quality of care has been outstanding. The municipality has actually piggybacked onto our contract and opened their own clinic, and employees from both entities can now attend either clinic. Unfortunately, I don't know that this is probably not a feasible solution for smaller districts around the state, but I wanted to provide an example of what our district has done really to help lower our costs or keep them from escalating too quickly. Next slide. So, as I said, healthcare costs are almost the most expensive in the nation, and that's directly tied also to workers' comp. And there's really a direct correlation as healthcare and workers' comp. Higher energy costs it varies so much between urban and rural areas of the state, in which some of that is addressed through the district's cost factor inside the formula. Increases in liability insurance. Our district's experienced about a 40 to 50% increase in our liability insurance over the last couple of years, I think about 2 years. And really that's driven primarily by nationwide trends in sexual abuse claims and traumatic brain injuries. It's not an Alaska problem necessarily, but it is a nationwide problem that it's really been expensive, and we need to some way address it. And then other issues are teacher housing in remote school districts and shipping and transportation costs increasing as well. Next slide. I'll try to hurry this up. You guys can look at the slide. It's really shows the cost differential between Alaska and the rest of the nation. And, you know, even within Alaska, there's such a wide cost differential between districts and just areas within the state. Next slide. This is a slide we received from the Alaska Municipal League, and it shows revenue or shows state and local spending on education adjusted for inflation since 2009. The blue background is an overlay of our ADM for the same time period. So you can, as total funding has tracked inflation overall, it hasn't quite tracked the growth when taking into account the number of students. Next slide. The next slide is our, what we call the pencil chart. It's produced by Deed and shows the BSA every year since 2000. This version shows every year since 2011, which is about a 4.4% increase in BSA. And you can see within those years, there are some years that we had money outside of the district, which is typically distributed based on the adjusted ADM for each district. So you can see an increase in overall BSA. And then the next slide, if we move to that, will show the inflation-adjusted BSA tied to 2019 dollars. So we tied the FY19 BSA of 59.30 and ran out inflation regression through back to 2011. So you can really see that trend. It shows the purchasing power that's eroded as the BSA has not kept pace with inflation. And that's about a 12% decline in purchasing power. When I first saw the slide a couple of weeks ago, I decided to go back and look at ASD staffing over the same time period. And ASD had reduced about 10% of its general fund FTE over the same period. It would have been closer to about 12%, but our district was able to use about $8 million in fund balance in our current fiscal year to be able to support ongoing operations. So largely, our staffing has tracked this erosion of purchasing power. And while district has found efficiencies in some areas, you know, our district is nearly 90% of our funding goes towards personnel, so budget reductions that we have largely come from staffing. Next slide. So a couple other funding issues that we're tracking is our transportation. The state's funding for transportation hasn't been adjusted since 2015. Embedded in there is we had increased costs tied to minimum wage, which has increased about 18% since 2015, since drivers are being paid twice the minimum wage per our state statute. And even with increasing wages, it has been very difficult for us to fill driver positions, so the district loses employees to the city who provides 12-month employment, as well as to the tourism industry. Although the tourism industry is seasonal, drivers are incentivized to stay on for the entire season, which now extends well past the start of school. And even with decreasing enrollment, you know, routes are difficult to reduce. Students aren't leaving from whole neighborhoods, so there's still the same number of miles that need to be driven and stops that need to be made to get kids in school, although there might be a few less students on the bus. The other issue is bond debt reimbursement. Currently, it's only for bonds passed prior to 2015, but it does shift responsibility to municipalities and will affect state aid for school construction. The rural school construction is tied to the amount that the state dedicates toward bond debt reimbursement. Next slide. So lastly, I'd just like to provide some information that might help you as legislators make the tough decisions that are going to be presented to you in this year and future years, undoubtedly. For more information regarding the individual districts that you represent, I would encourage you to contact your respective superintendents and business managers and really learn more about how your funds are being spent to help educate students. I thank you for your time, and I would like to pass this on to Mr. Sam Jordan, who is with the Grants and Outreach Administrator for the Alaska Staff Development Network.
Right. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jordan.
And Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Mr. Jordan, I'm sorry, I apologize for interrupting you, but before you begin, I just want to state that I anticipate we're going to start losing our committee members. We will have a floor session starting in about 15 minutes. We'll probably run this for at least another 5 or 10 minutes to give you time to get into your presentation, but then I'll have to close the meeting out no later than 10:25. So if
you bet, yeah, thank you, and I promise I will go fast.
That's a lot of information, right. But please begin.
For the record, my name is Sam Jordan, and I'm a grants administrator and outreach coordinator with the Alaska Staff Development Network. I've been a public educator for 20 years, and I'm the proud parent of two amazing daughters in the Mat-Su Borough School System. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about the Alaska Staff Development Network. ASDN is a private, nonprofit organization, and we've been in existence for over 35 years. And outside of school districts, ASDN is the largest provider of educator professional development in the state. Next slide, please. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues on our small but mighty team, Program Administrator Kathy Blank, Grants Admin Director Kelly Tonsmere, Grants Administrator Noel Dersay, Program Coordinator C.N. Murphy, our Code.org Program Manager Cheryl Bobo, and finally our ACTLIN Program Manager Tammy Morris. Next slide, please. We are Alaska's statewide resource for K-12 professional development, and our organization's mission is to provide educators with multiple pathways to refine and improve their instructional practice, and also to maintain their educator certifications. And so we ensure that we're anticipating new trends in education by bringing those to Alaska so that all of our educators have opportunity to learn on the cutting edge of innovative practices. Here's ASDN by just some really pertinent numbers. We have over 6,000 overall registrations annually for our professional development. We serve over 2,000 educators annually with online classes. We offer 70 self-paced online professional development courses, offer 8 webinar series yearly that serve over 700 Alaskan educators. And then finally, we host the largest PK through 12 professional development conference in Alaska. And 1 in 10 Alaskan educators attend that. So now I'm going to discuss briefly the different parts of our professional development work. Next slide, please. So I want to start by telling you about our response to the pandemic. We've been leveraging the power of technology to reach and support educators since the start of our organization. So in many ways, our approach really didn't change this year, but very specifically, when COVID arrived in Alaska in March last year, we as an organization knew that we needed to pivot to support educators as they moved into remote teaching. So literally over a weekend, we planned out a schedule of over 50 online workshops to support professional needs across the curriculum. We leveraged our networks of master educators and our partnerships like that with the Coalition for Education Equity. And what resulted was 3,800 registrations by educators seeking to meet the needs of their students by learning new practices and new strategies. And we also made the choice to offer everything at no cost so that we limited any barriers that educators might have. We also saw the creation of a really supportive and encouraging community of educators focused on the demands of teaching amidst a pandemic. We repeated this model in the fall as educators came back to the 2021 school year with similar success. And quite honestly, it was one of the most gratifying moments we've had as an organization. Next slide, please. So next I'm going to talk about the annual Statewide Effective Instruction Conference. So each year ASDN looks out at the most important voices in K-12 education and brings them to Alaska. This annual conference, it's now in its 10th year, provides Alaskan educators with an opportunity for reflection and deep learning about their practice. This year, our keynote presenters ranged from an eminent literary educator, Dr. Anita Archer, who spoke passionately about literacy leadership, to internationally recognized UCLA math professor, Dr. Joe Bowler, who spoke about the new horizons of data science and math instruction, and to Ricky Robertson, whose focus on social-emotional learning and resiliency during the pandemic year has been so critical to supporting educators across the U.S. So the 2021 Effective Instruction Conference was for the first time a virtual conference. The upside of this format was that it allowed educators from some of our most remote schools to participate for the first time. We had over 1,200 registrations for the event, and it made it our largest conference ever. Okay, so next slide, please. So at the end of each school year, ASDN also hosts the Alaska School Leadership Institute. It's targeted supporting leaders from rural and small schools, but it is open to everyone. Many school district teams use this time to strategize and plan for the next school year. So this year's institute will be virtual and focus on rebounding from the pandemic and recovering from learning loss And we're very pleased to be joined by Dr. John Hattie, who's an internationally celebrated educator and researcher on instructional effectiveness. You may have heard about his visible learning research. This conference also supports meetings of the incoming superintendents cohorts, as well as the Alaska School Leadership Academy cohorts that you heard Principal Robin Jones talk about earlier. Next slide, please. So ASCN also serves as the lead professional development partner in 5 federal grants, working with the Bering Strait, North Slope, Lower Kuskokwim, Yukon-Koyukuk, Alaska Gateway, and Nenana City School Districts. And these grants are all designed to specifically focus in on student achievement and increasing educator capacity. Next slide, please. ASDN also serves as the lead partner in Alaska's only federal Gear Up grant with the Lower Kuskokwim and Bering Strait School Districts. This is a 7-year project, and it focuses on college and career readiness for students across southwestern Alaska. Next slide, please. So changing gears, ASDN is leading the advancement of computer science in Alaska. We're the Code.org regional partner for Alaska, and we're in our 3rd year of working diligently to empower educators to teach this new subject. And it's one that's critical to Alaskan students being competitive in the U.S. job market. Code.org is the leading K-12 computer science resource, really at this point around the world, and they provide an accessible and exciting computer science curriculum that's now being taught across Alaska thanks to our efforts. Next slide, please. Just really briefly, you know, computer science very, you know, simply is driving the economies both nationally and here in Alaska. Industries across our state are in critical need of employees who are trained in coding or in computer science in order to stay competitive. So as Superintendent Boyd stated earlier, these CTE pathways are really the key to linking Alaska's schools to the Alaskan economy. So right now, as of today, there's about 1,000 computing jobs that are available in Alaska with an average salary of about $81,000. And we really want those jobs to go to Alaskans and not be telecommuted or imported from the lower 48. And so that starts in K-12 schools with computer science education. Next slide, please. And so to date, we've held 60 professional development trainings and provided training on computer science instructional practice to 580 Alaskan educators. And we're very thankful to be supported in this work by Code.org, by GCI, by the Alaska Department of Ed, and Alaska Airlines. And next slide, please. So I won't spend a lot of time on this, but Alaska, or ASDN, also runs the Alaska Professional Learning Network, or ACPLN, to meet the needs of educators to connect around the state. We currently have 2,500 registered users on this. It's a very flexible platform and allows people to connect around curriculum and instruction and also learn from each other. And we're very pleased to be partnering with Department of Ed in that project, as well as the Coalition for Education Equity in Alaska. Next slide, please. All right, and finally, you know, in my work at ASDN, I've got 2 passion projects. The first you heard about earlier from Principal Robin Jones. I serve as the project lead for the Alaska School Leadership Academy that supports early career principals. The second is this. It's the Our Alaskan Schools blog. So our staff is in constant contact with educators all over the state, and we see amazing things happening in their schools and in their classrooms. But we recognize that those stories don't always make it into the public discourse. So for the past 2 years, we have been using this blog to highlight positive things happening in our public schools. I certainly hope that you've seen some of these articles over time. To date, we've got about 97 articles up there written by and about Alaskan schools. We really invite you to take some time to read those stories about the brilliance of our educators and their students, and also encourage you to share your favorites with others. And with that, I'll conclude my comments. I thank you very much for the time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ratliff, for your presentation. I tell you what, it looks like we got in under the wire on this. I appreciate all the information that was presented to us today. I saw some of the committee people here writing, fervently writing questions. We'll try to get them to the presenters, and y'all can pick which answers you, which questions you want to provide answers to. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is an important meeting, and I actually delayed floor. I didn't know if you were going to get under the wire, but I have at least 9 questions. This is an extremely important topic, so I'm hoping maybe we have a follow-up meeting after we get our questions to you for Lisa and the others to answer.
That would be fine. If committee members want to, even the ones virtually online, if y'all want to submit the questions to the Senate Education Committee, we'll get them off to Dr. Parity. And with that, I thank everyone who participated today. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 10:26.